It's often heard that the fragmentation today is caused by tribalism. And that is partly true, but the way people understand tribalism is often wrong. Tribalism is not some hardwired instinct to hate.
The species that was more wired for hostility against neighboring groups is the one that went extinct. You know, we're the one that survived.
When we talk about geopolitical fragmentation and geopolitical conflict, we tend to talk on the national level. It's important to focus on the sub-national level, what is going on within countries. My work is concerned with regions and cities that are left behind, the kinds of places where people not only feel that they have been economically left behind, but they really are left behind. And this is a very fertile ground for more extreme political thinking, which is further fracturing our economy.
Firms suffer from the weakened property rights, the weakened law enforcement, the policy unpredictability. Populism is a common phenomenon around the world, but it has lots of different forms in different countries. For businesses, it is really a source of risk because the expectations on the political environment change, and they change in unpredictable ways.
We've been witnessing unprecedented levels of fragmentation in the world economy.
The new role of governments, interfering with the private sector, subsidizing industries, creating tariffs that distort international trade and investment, have created a new landscape for the business world.
The dominant power of USA might be falling, and it generates some kind of disruptive impact.
YESE, in collaboration with the Social Trends Institute, have been organizing this conference on the future of multinational companies in this new context.
To actually understand what drives this fragmentation, is it cultural, is it political, is it social, is it economic? But then importantly, really think about approaches of what both scholars and business leaders can do to connect and reconnect across those many divides.
We live in interesting times, but we have been here before. State capitalism is not new. It is something that we have experienced throughout history, and now we are coming back into the pendulum towards a more government intervention.
Not only regulations, but also other key aspects for developing countries, like access to raw materials, access to technology, the flow of trade.
I think strategically, Europe is now learning that it cannot expect win-win. We are used to win-win. And win-win is what we want also economically in globalization, but also in defense. We think win-win is the optimal game, which it is. But then we are not used to zero-sum game playing from the US, which is the preferred mode of President Trump.
Some companies may choose to withdraw and become more national, so as to source and produce in the market in which you sell. Some companies may choose to move from global to regional footprints, but I think that the vast majority of companies are trying to diversify their global supply chains, and they're going to diversify their export markets in order to gain the resilience I was talking about.
We have moved from a full globalization to a regionalization.
As organizational scholars, we need to upgrade our tools, the constructs that we use to do research, the research questions that we develop and work on, so that we can become even more relevant.
When we started studying these firms, most of them were from advanced economies, most of them were managed from a corporate headquarters. So the main constructs that developed in this period of research were liability of foreigners, cultural distance, institutional distance.
Now, almost half of the global Fortune 500 come from emerging markets, and about 138 from China.
much of how HR practice and human resource management practice has evolved in organizations has been built on pretty short-term goals and pretty short-term incentives and largely around shareholder value.
And I'd like to challenge that a little bit and argue that shareholder wealth can be a poor indicator of long-term sustainability, and I think there's many in the room would share that view.
We observe that companies that are navigating well this geopolitical landscape are doing a number of things. First thing, very important, is try to understand the differences across countries.
So the kinds of boundaries that I study and that I'll be talking about today are geographic boundaries, so people who are globally distributed, sometimes in different cultures, sometimes speaking different languages. For the most part, the dynamics are the same.
In many organizations, although the leadership is saying it's really important to collaborate across these boundaries, the incentives are still for either the individual or for the subunit.
Great leaders and great artists have the courage to see reality the way it is, not the way we imagine it, not the way we would want it to be, but the way it actually is.
The global supply chains are reconfiguring. And most important of all is that the consensus that once guided international relations and international business is fracturing.
And great artists and great leaders have the courage to see possibility, even if the possibilities seem naive or stupid to other people. They have the creativity to imagine possibilities.
You are not truly whole unless you embrace your opposite. So fragmentation could be the beginning of coming together.
If you're going to bring people together, it's really important that there be psychological safety, that people feel like they can be authentic and be open and talk about potentially unpopular topics and still be appreciated and respected.
If we're using AI to record all of our meetings,
then it's possible that people will not be as authentic. They may not feel as comfortable bringing up difficult subjects.
The word identity has come up. To me, that's one way to create a more inclusive boundary, which is I'm creating a super, almost superordinate identity that serves as an umbrella to hold differences.
A shared identity. So some kind of shared vision that they are all working toward, that they all care about, and for which they understand that they are important.
Traditions are invented, not just inherited. They are reshaped and reconstructed retrospectively by each generation.
If you want to unify people in the present, and even if you want to make a radical change, you should have a working knowledge of the history of the organization and the facility to invoke a suitable chapter from the past, which makes the current plan or platform seem familiar. The best kind of change management is when employees don't think it's a change at all. They think it's just acting consistent with the firm's identity and history.
Another thing I think companies can do would be enlarging temporal perspective.
I tell my EMBA students they need to be clear about who they are as a person and what their values are, and that implies drawing some red lines, what you would or would not do. Think not just what's going to happen to you in the next quarter or year, but think about the longer perspective. What are your grandchildren going to think about what you are doing now?
In HR terms, what got us here won't get us there. I think organizations really need to reevaluate how they manage their people and how we need to proactively identify the evolution of skills in our organization, what that means for jobs, and really redesign our organizations around kind of deconstructed jobs and skills-based approaches to ensure that our workforce remains employable.
So we defined it as the unbundling of formal job roles into discrete job elements like projects or tasks. So we break down the work and then we dynamically match people based on their skills and knowledge to those tasks.
What I see as a critical kind of factor of success for the future is training of smart managers who can
lead their companies with critical thinking, maintaining basic and clear moral principles, which helps all organizational members kind of stand behind a common core.
Companies have options
within regard of political strategy. What can we do if we are running companies? Exit voice loyalty. Exit, in some cases, is not a possibility. Then we end up with two options, voice or loyalty.
Companies do have a voice. Managers can be politically active and promote ideas that are good for the company, good for society.
So I guess one of the key points is for the managers to be the facilitator of a constructive dialogue, conversation. And secondly, is that they might be a kind of architect of their collaboration structure.
The Yin-Yang way of seeing fragmentation is let it go first, and then we could build the bridges like a mindset shift. Not just we win, they lose, that we win, they also win. You do not permanently sign or stand or align with the exclusively with one group. You navigate a la carte like arrangement based on issues with each other.
On the local level, there is a real need for foreign investors to become, in some sense, less risk averse so that they would consider locations that appear to be quite remote, because only with the agglomeration of new investment do we get communities that are really viable in the long run. A lot of businesses these days are not as sensitive to location as they were before because we have digitally based businesses, and it's these kinds of businesses that we would hope to attract to areas that previously were left behind.
I invited people to look at where are the positive deviants, not what's the norm, not what most people are doing, but what are the organizations doing that are outstanding, that just take our breath away. People's souls yearn for beauty. People's humanity yearns for beauty. So you see people reaching out to different forms of the arts, either individual or collaborating with other people, even when it's extremely dangerous. And you don't see that around a lot of other projects. Do well financially by doing good. So not separating those two questions of how do we do well financially and then in some philanthropic way, giving to society. Do well financially by doing good.
All those dimensions need more than ever a very, very effective corporate governance model for the company. Nobody has the best answer. And by collaborating across different levels of management and governance, companies can become much more effective in navigating these very complex geopolitical waters.